To spend another hour looking at some amazing photos from Mars with Frank Jacob. We did this a couple of nights ago, and Frank was kind enough to get up early in the morning over there in Europe and go through his photos. I had a group, he's got a group, and we're going to take a look at those with all of you tonight. So go to the guests section and look under Frank's name and click on the photos. You can't miss them. It says Frank's Mars photos. So I'm going to click right now and load that page up as well. Hello, young man. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. You sound like you're just about fully woken up.
Well, you know, if this keeps going, I'm on a trend. Like, this is the third time middle of the night I've done a show this week.
Wow. Well, I told you not to move to Europe. You wouldn't listen, but...
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can't resist living in the Alps. It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Not to.
Well, I was just looking at a picture today of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun's house in... San Carlos de Bariloche in Argentina that they moved into when Bormann got them out of the bunker. And it's right at the foot of the Andes, which is like the Alps. And
exactly. You know, well, they're actually, it's funny because they had a place right around the corner from where I am right now, too, all those years ago. Looking down, and we were up there recently just taking a look. It's called the Eagle's Nest.
Oh, you're near... The Eagle's Nest. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this call is connecting us between the two zones. It's pretty interesting, but quite a view up there, Jeff. Quite amazing.
Well, that's the Eagle's Nest is, yeah, not far from Berchtesgaden, which is where his home was. And until the idiots blew it up after the war, they should have left it alone. The whole area should have been preserved for history.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. That was the thing that we noticed. We were looking at the ruins that are left. They basically bombed it. And in fact, there was a construction crew that was trying to repair a road, and they stumbled upon a 500-kilogram H-bomb that had not gone off, that had dropped during that period of time. And they
well,
were
it
trying
wouldn't
to
be an H-bomb. It would have been
A bomb.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, they were trying to get that out of the ground carefully without blowing it up.
And
so
this is recently?
Very recently, last week, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was a...
And then,
go ahead.
You just see all these ruins there, and the first thing that crosses your mind is, like, what did the buildings have to do with all of this? Why didn't they leave this standing as a historical monument? Because regardless of which perspective you take of what took on, you know, it's just...
Absolutely.
It's such a shame. And,
dumber
you know,
than dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They left the Eagle's Nest intact, and I don't know how much money that generates every year. You've gone up there in the elevator, I assume.
Yes, absolutely. We were there filming and taking some pictures.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It was in the movie. The Packing for Mars is Frank's film, by the way. I want to mention that. That Eagle's Nest was built under Bormann's supervision, I believe, for Hitler, and they were all up there. But he spent 99% of his time when he was in the area at Berchtesgaden, his home. I have some a friend picked up some of the debris from the house. I have a couple pieces, and pretty interesting to even contemplate how dumb those people were to have blown it up. It is.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, we could do a whole show on that. We could do a whole show on that subject matter, because it's just very, interesting how that's all kind of, you know, that information has never really been fully explored in a neutral perspective. It was too hot of a subject, and it probably still is too hot of a subject.
Well, you don't want to say things in Germany. You can go to jail in Germany if you say the wrong things.
Absolutely. So, exactly. You can't even display certain symbols over in Germany would get you in jail.
Yeah. Fortunately, you're in Austria and you're still relatively safe. So, all things considered. Yeah. Now, we go to Frank Jacob's photos, his Mars pictures, and if you're all ready, we'll step into them. The first one is the big map of Cydonia, which most of us have seen over the years. And it's full of unusual things. Let's jump in.
Exactly. Well, see, what we're looking at here is the Cydonia region of Mars. And, you know, it shows remarkable signs of alignments and perspectives that would really indicate an intelligent design. You know, and a few months back, I was in Butuan City giving a presentation about the astro-archaeological connection between Mars, Earth, and Moon. I was there with Tonya Maidenford. She's the executive producer and producer of Packing for Mars, by the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you ever have me back on the show, you should definitely have Tonya on the show as well, because she has an interesting perspective on all this stuff as well. But what we were showing is really that it's all about connecting the dots. And there were two papers that were brought out in the Journal of Space Exploration by a couple of scientists called Crater and McDaniel. And they give us some really fantastic information about these astro-archaeological remnants that seem to have been left behind by, you know, it could be nothing other than really an intelligent species if you take all things into consideration. And the first thing I think I wanted to look at was, you know, something we touched on briefly in the last show with your pictures, and that's this highly interesting wedge-like shape feature that's often called the exclamation on Mars, which would be the second picture.
Right. Yeah, that's a knockout. It does look like an exclamation mark or a keyhole, but
exactly.
Very unusual.
It's located in the flat plains of the Libya Mountains on Mars, and this is a picture that was taken by the Mars Odyssey in the reconnaissance orbiter, and essentially it shows us sort of a triangular and a circular aspect which resembles kind of like a keyhole. And what Crater and McDaniel show us is they actually studied and analyzed this, and they demonstrate a very, very unique set of geometric measurements. So, you know, and when you consider that there was like such an extensive erosion on the surface of the planet, I mean, we don't know how old these structures are. They could be a million years or more old.
Uh-huh, sure.
But it's amazing that after all this time, there are still this, you know, remarkable symmetry in this formation, because it speaks everything against natural mechanisms that basically reduce things toward randomness and abstraction over time instead of maintaining, you know, this sort of symmetry.
Right. I think we have to thank for that the lack of a real significant, active, vital, vibrant atmosphere on Mars. There's not much weather there. There's not a lot of wind. There's wind, but nothing like tornadoes, typhoons, hurricanes, and all of that. So you've got a fairly gentle landscape, which would allow... We can see dust on everything and built-up dunes, but if this had been a real radical climate planet, I don't think we'd even see as much as we do now at all.
No, definitely not, yeah. Well, these formations, that what's interesting is that the angles of the triangle, there's, if you assign, you know, letters to these things, like there's, you know, and you basically draw diagrams around these, you come up with angles of like an X and Y is 75 degrees, a Z is 30 degrees, it adds up to 180 degrees, which is very interesting, like, because it's an isosceles triangle. And if you draw a line that bisects this shape, then you end up basically with a point that, you know, is a completely perfect slice in half of this, like a trapezoid section.
Huh.
And the upper and lower ridges of the wedge basically are essentially running parallel to each other. That means these little two, if you look at the picture, you see kind of what looks like an outer ridge, and then inside of that and toward the middle of the triangle, there's another form of ridge on both sides. Can you see that?
Oh, I see it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. And that part essentially is also perfectly parallel. So the adjoining upper line and the lower line basically are perfectly aligned.
Well, the lower lines are visually darker and more pronounced.
Quite amazing. It's not something that really should exist. It's just something that makes you. And you know, so if we look at comparisons now to like what is this shape? Like we're always talking about a comparison between Earth and Mars and Moon. Like where is the evidence that there might be this ancient connection between a possible civilization which maybe traversed both our planets? And so there would have to be some kind of evidence of a shape like this, perhaps also on the Earth. Just like we have pyramids now that we found on Mars, we also have other shapes on the surface.
And now what Frank is suggesting here is that perhaps the people on Mars were very much like the people here. They thought alike. Maybe they visited back and forth, and they duplicated some of their structures.
Exactly. And in that last show, we had you had a picture up there of a kind of a what looked like a head with teeth that even had reflections and everything in it. And you know that this was something that Brandenburg was talking about in his presentations, being a clear indication that the Mexicano sort of culture seems to have been on both planets.
Could have
and
been
so if we look at
one of
yeah,
many,
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Could have been one of many. And if we look at this next slide, the number slide four, here's an example of a shape on Earth, which have begun to, you know, with the help of Google Earth, many of these formations have begun to be identified here on Earth. This one we're looking at here is from the Saudi Arabian area and is a tomb that dates back about 4000 BC.
Huh. I've not seen that picture before. You had it up here. Keyhole-shaped tomb, Saudi Arabia. Yeah, very interesting. What's the white around it that we're seeing? Just sand or disturbed
earth?
Yeah, it's probably just
sand. I mean, this one's pretty badly eroded.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's also fairly old. The next picture we have another example.
See,
of
look at.
An
by the way,
based.
Look at that picture number four, Frank, and look at the vehicle tracks, the roadways.
Yes.
We saw the same thing on Mars in one of those pictures.
Yes, absolutely. There's that kind of stuff is going on the moon as well. There's roadways. There seems to be roadways. But that one here is pretty interesting. And if you look at the next one as well, the slide five, we have another keyhole tomb, which has been found which is in Kofun, Japan. This one's not as old, so it's in much better shape. This one's only like 400 AD. So, obviously, a little bit better preserved.
Now you have to ask yourself, what is the reference for duplicate keyhole shapes on Mars and on Earth? Right away, you got what's the deal? How did that translate?
You know, yeah, the an archaeologist by the name of Robert Schock, you may know of him. He was looking at these keyholes too, and he was saying for him it was like an indication. Kind of a landform as a marker saying whoever was flying over at a very high altitude would have to sort of take notice and look to see what's going on here. But it's interesting if you look at this Kofun, Japan one, you can really see these prominent parallel lines. There's the outside line and then there's the inside triangle. And this is exactly what's going on the formation. So if we compare it, if we want to compare it to the Mars formation, the next slide is that perfect comparison. You had it in your other in your last show and your pictures as well, but it's great to have a look at that. Really, these side by side comparison and slide six between these two. It's just.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are the chances? You know, they're really.
Right.
It's. it is what it is, and how much of the keyhole on Mars has been eroded at the top, how much of it's buried, we don't know. But it's fascinating, truly.
What are the odds of an architect on Earth being inspired by the same shape as an architect on Mars, right, Jeff?
Virtually zero. Yeah.
Yes.
Just doesn't happen.
So this one is really amazing, and I think and the creator McDonald, really, they spent, you know, like, their paper is very extensive, and anyone who wants to look that up on Google, I highly recommend it. If you're interested in the subject matter, it's really gonna blow your mind looking at these exact specific mathematics that they've worked out. We'd never have time for us to go into all those exact details and calculations on this show, but definitely it's something that's been studied scientifically, yeah. And it's definitely something that's undeniable. And if you look at our next picture, 7, you get an idea of the way artifacts that are found typically on Earth look when they are first discovered.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, the erosion on Mars of this keyhole shape may not even be erosion. It might actually just be covered up. And if we got close enough to the ground and we began to uncover it, we'd probably end up looking at something closer to what the Giza Plateau now in Egypt looks like after they've uncovered all the pyramids. And they're all clean. And even in South America and Mexico, they were all covered by mounds of forest and earth. And Sam Ismanagic, you know, he was also in Butuan City with us giving a presentation,
huh.
And he was showing us that the Bosnian pyramid itself is also, yeah. You know, covered with half the side of it is covered with a town. So
that's a knockout, the Bosnian pyramid. He has really done some amazing work on that. You know, they still haven't charted all of the Mayan cities that are lost, covered by jungle and rainforest down there. They haven't found anywhere near all of them.
Exactly. No, there's many, and the thing is that pyramids and things like these are being found on other planetary bodies on our solar system. It's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what made them and why are they there is the question. You know, so anyway, let's move along. The mounds of Cydonia are another geological formation that were explored by Crater and McDaniel, and I'd like to go into that a little bit too in our next slides. Essentially, these guys, you know, analyzed several formations, and when they looked at the mounds of Cydonia, again, here we're talking about the theme of connecting the dots. Well, they really did do an extensive analysis of a shape which is a pentad. In the Cydonian plateau, you know, which basically would suggest that somebody specifically placed mounds on the surface of the Cydonia region to help others, perhaps an intelligent species which is flying over, to identify, you know, someone was smart enough to place these things in this location. So it would indicate that there's an intelligence there. Now, this idea of drawing some kind of a geometric figure on the terrestrial landscape was even done here on Earth. It goes back as far as 1820 when Gauss came up with a plan to do that in the Siberian forest. And in the 1997 film Contact, you know, that we're all familiar with that theme, that essentially the character Ellie is, you know, searching, you know, the heavens for signals coming from space, and then they find one and essentially break it down into a signal which has patterns in pi, which forms kind of a very long string of ones and zeros, and they eventually determine that, oh, you know, it's basically the role that pi plays in this number of ones and zeros is a circle, and ultimately becomes the scheme for an entire blueprint for them to build this structure that allows them to reconnect with our space brothers. So we could look at the next slide, and you know, I'll show these mounds here that we're talking about.
What number are we for our listeners?
That would be 8, slide 8. And this area is called the fort. And the picture, and the gold colored picture is a more recent picture, mm-hmm. and the one that's in the foreground, the black and white picture with the mounds on it.
Yeah.
This is one of the original ones that was taken by the Viking missions. And when they first put their paper together, Crater McDaniel were criticized for using, you know, an old low resolution picture, and they were people thought, well, look, you know, the resolution's not high enough, it's just coincidence, it couldn't be, you know, etc. And so they went, when they did their recent picture, they actually went to the newer resolution pictures, and were hoping that, you know, if this is true, then they would find evidence that their calculations were off. But in fact, the opposite was proven. In fact, the newer high-res pictures are showing even more precisely that these mounds are lined up even more with higher precision than originally thought.
Hmm.
And that, so they drew a series of connecting dots between these different, as we see them labeled here, A, E, D, B, G, etc., and to come up with, if we look at slide 9, to come up with a formation, a pentad. And we could look at that next slide.
Okay.
And the pentad is formed by the letters G, A, B, D, E. And I've laid it over top of the area on the mounds on the right, so you get an idea of where it's actually sitting relative.
Uh-huh.
And so essentially, the pentad has within it several different amazing formations, which really shouldn't exist in nature as well. And those are the ones that we can go into in our next slide, which are demonstrated. They've been isolated individually for us to look at. And the first one would be on slide 10 on the left.
Who did all this work, Frank?
Well, Crater and McDaniel did all this work, and we basically mined it, and we did some additional work with it. And of course, a lot of it is it's about, and we also did this in Packing for Mars. It was more about, rather than showing isolated evidence, it was more about taking a series of seemingly disconnected pieces of evidence and putting them together to show the greater picture.
An astrogeologist named Crater.
Yes.
The irony of it all.
Yes, totally, totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I kept having to look and say, is that his real name? I mean, it's like... Anyway, the figure on the left is an isosceles triangle.
Uh-huh.
And I guess we're heading into a break, right? So maybe we should
go ahead and do isosceles real quick.
Then. Yeah, the isosceles triangle basically has internal angles that match the cross section of the tetrahedron of the pentad.
Yeah, very good. You wonder how much dust and debris has accumulated there over the years, and as you say, if it could be cleaned away, what would really be under there? I would suggest
exactly
astonishing foundations and probably structures entirely that are covered up. All right, back in a flash. Hold on. Frank Jacob, taking a look at Mars. We're at picture number 10 right now on our assemblage. And if you look under Frank's name, if you just joined us, look for Frank's pictures and click on that and you'll load them right up. Okay, go ahead, Frank.
All right. So if we look at the picture in the middle, which is called figure 5D, we're looking at two congruent right triangles within that pentad. We see mark GAA and EAB, which is basically two triangles with the exact same angles, both having a right angle. And yeah, exactly like a mirror, an opposite mirror of one another. The odds of that happening are pretty astronomical. And on the right, we have two additional right triangles within the pentad, which are you know, the one is marked GED and the other is marked ADB. So those are some pretty remarkable formations, basically, within the pentad that have exactly the same, mm-hmm. they all have exactly the same angles.
Mm-hmm.
On the next slide.
Now, those are, we want to point out that those triangles and the pentad are connected by things on the ground.
Yes.
And if you look at the picture on the left, G at the top left, with no line drawn to it, you'll get a better look at these. Now, these objects appear to be kind of like eggs, if you will, just for fun. But they're laid out there. And what are they? And why are they so identical? How do they get there?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
So these are, what we're doing is they're drawing geometry between objects that are laying on the ground, and they're not laying there in a random sense, apparently. So just look at the objects, and most interesting. That's all I can say.
Well, it's like we said, you know, some intelligent species, the theory being that if there was intelligent species on the planet or a civilization, that they would set markers on the ground for another spacefaring civilization that would pass by, that would say, hey, look, there's something going on here we're taking a look at.
Help.
Right. And it's not that far-fetched of an idea to think that we would do it.
Look at that. I mean, when you look at those objects, I wish we had, and you know they the ESA, and they've got super high resolution of the every square foot of the Martian surface that they've been over with that satellite. We're not allowed to see it. But they can tell what these things are. They can zoom right in on them.
Absolutely.
Are they just round rocks? Or what are they?
They've been looking very carefully at this, and it just keeps getting more interesting. And that's why I put these slides together, because if you keep going, even the next slide, we're looking. If you look at that, you can see relative areas of the right triangles, and you can see in the first box on the left on slide 11, number one. The area of number one and the area of number two and the area of number three are essentially representing the first three prime numbers. So, the area of two is double the area of one, obviously, and the area of three is the area of one plus two.
Are we thinking, Frank, excuse me, are we thinking that these objects, they're white, just in terms of reflection? Are we thinking that they may have been placed there?
Absolutely.
Sooner,
you know,
in the past rather than later in the past. They're new. They're relatively new. And whatever they are, they appear to be reasonably identical. And you can make a case for that. With shadows, you know, you can't tell. But they're about the same size. They're about the same shape. So what are they?
Yeah.
You have 30 seconds to answer that question.
Well, you know, they really do stand out from the other mounds, and there's several mounds around that area as well. There's also some geologic activity which has been going on in that surface, and that's one of the things that Crater and McDaniel brought into their paper. They didn't want to just be all euphoric and say, oh, look, you know, we found ET, but they actually analyzed it from the perspective and giving a geologist the chance to look at it as too. And the geologist would basically say, well, it's all just random. The problem is there's nothing wrong with taking a geological formation and enhancing it somewhat, which is something that we see happening here on Earth.
Sure.
You know, Sam Osmanagic, you know, will talk about his Bosnian pyramid being such a formation, and Valery Uvarov, they're always talking about how not all pyramids have to be built brick by brick by humans. Some of them can be, they take land formations, and just the inherent quality of a pyramid in itself is a GPS marker, because it gives us the formation of stone into that configuration will actually produce registerable, measurable amounts of energy coming off the top of the pyramid. So become GPS markers. So these formations may well be enhanced geological formations. But what's clear is that they definitely stand out from the rest of the others in the area.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably 45 seconds, I think.
It's all right. You did well. You got a
so
pass.
We can keep moving along. You know, we got to keep going. We're not going to get all the slides in.
Go ahead.
The next one, you know, slide 12, we can basically see, you know, we can factor together that in the total area of the pentad, which we can be calculated as 5, it means that basically embedded within the pyramid are the first 4 prime numbers, 1, 2, 3, and 5.
Interesting.
Just represented in the areas depicted by the formation of the mounds.
Yeah, those whatever those items are, they shouldn't be there naturally. No, somebody put them there.
It gets wilder though. Okay, so bear with me here. The next one, we're getting into how the formations actually indicate that the builders or the placers of these mounds were trying to demonstrate the intrinsic spin angle of an electron. So what Crater and McDaniel show on slide 13, we see it, is that essentially, if calculated accordingly, it seems to represent a formula that is giving us the intrinsic spin angle of an electron. And we can see the, you know, the precise correspondence between the mound configuration and the electronic spin on the right when we look at the short side DB in figure 23. So essentially, what it's showing here is that the people that built this thing had an understanding of quantum physics, quantum mechanics on the surface of Mars right here.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end there, though. It doesn't end there. So we go to 14, we can see they actually show if they, you know, by this diagram, if you look at it, you can calculate the maximum composite magnetism down to the precise technical detail.
Oh, my. Yeah. That is really
interesting. Anyway, there's some cool geometry there for you on the surface of Mars. And
yes,
for our
indeed.
Listeners.
And that's just one spot. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, if we move on now and
got
we look
Brandenburg's
at essentially,
book.
Right. Brandenburg was a scientist. He's an astrophysicist, and he basically, he's a plasma physicist, I should say. He put together a book that details his findings about xenon 129, traces of xenon 129 on the surface, which indicate that the only way that the elevation of xenon 129 could be as high as over 2.5 times as high as it is on every other planet in our solar system. And that can only be for one reason, according to Brandenburg, and that would be that there was a produced form of fission radiation created in the production of atomic weapons. And if we go to our next slide, essentially that this is what happened in two areas on the planet where this can be registered. And that was exactly in the area that we just looked at. That's one of the areas, the Sidonia Mesa. And in another area off to the right, if we're looking at slide 16, is called Galaxias Chaos. Good name. Interesting that people would select that name, but you know all those pictures that you put in that you put into last night's slide. A lot of those pictures, some of the more profound ones, came from just south of. You know, it's indicated there the Curiosity rover's showing up on this picture here. It's roaming around a couple of hundred miles just south of the area Galaxias Chaos, and so if there really was a civilization. According to Brandenburg and others showing the formations that were, you know, wiped out by a massive atomic explosion, then there would have to be some kind of evidence.
A couple of them, yeah.
You know, there'd have to be a couple. And I think that those pictures we looked at on Friday, or sorry, Monday, or was it Tuesday? I don't remember anymore.
It was Halloween.
Those pictures are clear examples of what, you know, traces are remaining scattered and strewn across the surface. And it's a shame that the Curiosity and the Opportunity rovers aren't getting up closer into those areas. In fact, they're just on the perimeter so far away that they're probably only just getting traces.
I don't think that's an accident. I think they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think you might be right on that. So anyway, moving along, if we can, there's another scientist that that explored the idea of intelligent life.
Emmanuel Velikovsky,
and his name is Emmanuel Velikovsky. Yeah. Now he was basically a very controversial figure a lot of people, because he really wasn't an archaeologist. You know, he was, I think he was actually a psychologist or something. And he began to look at ancient historical records, and just through the comparative, doing comparative study of literature, he deduced that there indeed was a very, very ancient civilization on Earth that had its roots on other planets within our solar system. His groundbreaking work was called The Worlds in Collision. And essentially, he proposed that the Kuiper Belt, which is what we see on the far right of this slide, is actually the remnants of a very, very large planet that was once in our solar system that was destroyed. And that planet had the high probability of having Mars as its moon. So he proposed that those who were settled on that planet, some of them escaped and ended up on Mars. And Mars eventually settled into the orbit where it is in now.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, and then Mars itself had its own cataclysmic events as we can trace through history. And, you know, essentially, it's interesting because Mars has a lot of evidence of being a former moon. There's a lot of things, like there's a lot of its southern hemisphere is saturated with craters, and the northern has very, very sparse cratering. You know, you can look at its crustal thickness in the south, which decreases gradually toward the hemisphere edges. And, you know, this essentially there seems to have been a sudden geographic pole shift that occurred. And much of the atmosphere was lost, etc. And basically, Mars has all the evidence of being a moon that was part of that planet that landed in its orbit where it's in now and had a civilization on it. And I think when NASA and looked at these findings, you know, these Viking pictures that we looked at earlier, these triangular shapes and this pentad, they were not unaware of these things. They saw them. And as we explore in Packing for Mars, you know, we suggest that there were these things called Red Sun missions. And the Red Sun missions kind of were taking place underneath the attention of the Apollo missions, which seemed to, you know, have distracted and caught our attention on Earth. But it could very well be that the Mars missions to Red Sun were happening simultaneously because of what they found during the Viking missions. And they went there and studied these archaeological formations. And they became very, very interested in what may have been going on the planet of Mars. So much so that they even ventured so far as doing studies in a remote viewing. You know, we could look at the next slide, you know, 18... One of the shows that I was on with you, I talked about how the CIA started doing remote viewing experiments back in the 80s toward Mars.
Yep.
And here's a little excerpt of what came out of those remote viewing experiments that I've got on this slide. Like, you know, okay, when others left, these people were waiting, you know, how did they go? And, you know, they got an impression of, you know, something crazy, looks like inside of a large boat, very rounded walls, shiny metal. And then the monitor says, go along with them on their journey and find out where it is they go. And then the subject says, well, the impression is a really crazy place with volcanoes, gas pockets, and strange plants, volatile place. So this is indicating that essentially what this remote viewer was picking up on was the civilization on Mars that was escaping to try and save a portion of themselves and move on. And they had a massive spaceship that they were obviously getting into, and they left and they came to a place that had lots of volcanic activities and things. What kind of a place could that be?
I couldn't imagine.
Well, so anyway, let's look at the next slide. That's a picture of me with William Tompkins. And William Tompkins came forward, as we all know, in the last couple of years with some very stunning material about his relationship to scientists and engineers that were working with the Nazis. You know, we started the show talking about Berchtesgaden and some of the stuff.
Do you know how many programs
area.
Bill and I did together?
No, how many?
Oh, 20 maybe? I don't know.
Wow.
They're all here in the archives. We went A to Z. We did the whole thing. I'm going to put them all up on YouTube someday in a big series. It's a
great.
Wonderful resource and a treasury. If you look on the right-hand side of the homepage, just scroll down there until you see Bill, and then you'll see all the programs. They're all right there to be listened to at any time.
Oh yeah, I was so sad when he passed. You know, I just made such a great connection with him in Las Vegas at MUFON, and we were actually going to start on a project together, and then it all ended suddenly. But I'm sure you've seen this picture before, and this could be, you know, this is theorized as being the possibility of a spaceship moon, and you know, so the idea of moon being a spaceship, you know, is not that crazy, you know, because if you continue, if we're looking back at the work of Emmanuel Velikovsky,
right,
you know, there's historical records that the Earth was moonless. You know, the period, you know, there's some interesting quotes that I have. Like, even Aristotle wrote that Arcadia in Greece, before being inhabited by the Hellenists, had a population of Pelasgians, and these were aborigines occupied the land before there was a moon in the sky above the Earth. You know, and for this reason, they were called Proselenes. It's interesting. There's a direct historical quote from somebody on our planet about Earth not having a moon.
Yeah.
Well, and further, you know,
Bill said it was brought here.
It was brought here, exactly. The moon essentially is physically, nobody really explains this to us, but it's just too large to have been caught by Earth's gravitational field and ended up in the orbit that it's in. Because the moon's orbit is very, very precise. It's not an accident. It's just the odds of it being accident that it would be exactly in the position that it's in the exact distance from the Earth that it's in. They just don't make any sense. Unless, of course, you look at the moon as potentially being a spaceship, which was actually brought here.
Go ahead, Frank. Go ahead.
The evidence is that it was brought here. You know, there was basically, there's even a quote Emmanuel Velikovsky puts in his book. Apollonius and Rhodes mentioned a time when not all the orbs were yet in the heavens, before Dania and Deucalion races came into existence, and only the Arcadians lived, of whom it is said they dwelt on mountains and fed on acorns before there was a moon.
Mm-hmm.
There's another quote. Plutarch wrote in the Roman question, there were Arcadians and Evanders following the so-called pre-lunar people. So there's plenty of traces of evidence that the moon basically arrived here at some point after, and was brought here by someone. Who may it have been? Well, I think if we look at, you know, we take a look at connecting the dots between what we're finding on the surface of Mars and what we're finding now, if we're looking at it with physics, then it's clear that these things may have a good reason for being the way they are.
I see no reason to suspect that that asteroid belt outside of Mars was not a big planet. It just, we have a violent history. We're just a violent people. Maybe all life in the universe goes through this stage before they get past it. And they do
it could be.
Huge things of demolishing things that should never have been demolished. And
well, the moon's been a great source of interest ever since the Apollo missions, and
here's a question. We have enough time real quick. A lot of people ask this, well, how is it that this moon doesn't revolve and rotate? Why can't we see the other side of it? Should a normal moon rotate to the extent that we would be able to view all aspects of it at some point or another in its monthly cycle? If it were spinning, should it be spinning on its axis?
That's right. Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the moon spins, but it doesn't spin in the way that we would allow it to see all the sides. It spins
Correct.
The other way.
Correct.
It spins like a watch dial. So we don't actually see, we always only see one side of it, which is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
The remarkable thing about it is that it is rotating at that exact precise speed that we wouldn't see the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jose Escamilla told us in the interview that when they were on the moon, they did experiments like colliding certain objects into the planet to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're familiar. And what maybe some listeners don't know is that it caused like a giant gong. When it hit, it began ringing like a huge bell, and that ringing would continue for up to 20 hours.
That's right. Yeah. It went.
So there's plenty of evidence, I think, for us to take a closer look. It went exactly the giant gong in the sky.
Yeah.
And I think they did take closer look. And that's why I put in the next slide, 20, which is talking about the mysterious Apollo 20 mission, which has been a very, very long source of controversy.
Did it happen or didn't it happen?
Exactly. You know, and this is something that we definitely explored in Packing for Mars, because if we were following the idea of alternative three being, you know, setting up bases on the moon and from the moon going to Mars, we wanted to take a look at whether there was any evidence that we may have been on the moon. And it does appear to be that there was. And the interesting thing about the Apollo 20 missions is that, you know, these missions were already all funded and paid for, and they came along later and told us, well, they didn't have any more, they ran out of money. Well, this isn't true. And so what's clear from what we found is that all of this information that they found was essentially smudged and contaminated to the point where everybody looking at it would find these inconsistencies in the information, and they would dismiss all of it. Because if you can throw out the baby with the bathwater, it's great, you know, because you can basically say, well, look, there's some aspects of the photography which aren't right, so therefore all of it's
all wrong.
But
sure,
exactly. So we dared venturing beyond that idea and saying, look, if some of it's wrong, there might be a reason behind it. And we found actually the reason is very interesting in itself. It almost seems to indicate kind of a code or a signature left behind by those who created the falsifications in the image to tell us something, like little breadcrumbs that we would find historically.
Yeah, very good. All right, the last slide. Mona Lisa, EBE.
Is Mona Lisa EBE, and essentially we were thinking, what would these people look like that we may have been living on the surface of Mars or on the moon? And, you know, what they found on the Apollo 20 missions is an extraterrestrial entity, which they called Mona Lisa, also known as Shurhun. And I put a few pictures in there that, you know, some others that are Earth cultural pictures, and they have, you know, features that resemble the Mona Lisa that they found on the moon.
I can't remember. Do they bring it back or any part
of
it?
Apparently they brought it back. That's the story, is that they did bring her back. She is actually being held in an area in Russia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, stranger things. There are always lurking out there for us to find if we can only know where to look and have the chance. And thanks for opening so many doors, Frank. It's always been a great pleasure to talk to you. We'll do it again. And continued good luck and congratulations on the film, Packing for Mars. And what's your next project?
Well, we just did this with a collaboration with Michael Sala, and we put up that Hidden History of Antarctica workshop, which is very interesting, covers a lot of ground. And we are working on another project, which is probably going to be closer to Earth. I don't really want to go too much into it because we have our policy is total secrecy until we drop it. And then once it's dropped, it's too late to do anything about it.
Well,
so just to kind of safeguard us and protect us, we just,
if
you know,
there's anything I can do to assist you or help in any way, just let me know. Be happy to do
that. Would be wonderful. Maybe we can have you in the film.
Be an honor, whatever it is. I'll be most interested to see, and I'd love to contribute. Thank you, my friend. All right.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, Frank, get some sleep. Thank you for getting up early.
Will do.
All righty.
Take care.
Yes, indeed. You too. Mr. Frank Jacob, and fascinating slides. Whatever those objects are that were laid out there, they were laid out there. No doubt about it. Not in my mind. Okay, that is our Friday night, and we will be back Monday night live. But in the meantime, you know where to find us. And we'll be rerunning programs on the network over the weekend. So have fun, learn, and ask good questions. Talk soon.